You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das.
I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome back to Tech Cetera. This is a podcast where we discuss about Deepthi's gadget purchases and, of course, the rest of the technology industry. I can right now see Deepthi frowning at me, but we have started the podcast on the right note for sure.
That's true.
Yes, but beyond such gadget purchases, this is a podcast where we discuss about everything technology. This is a podcast where we discuss about what's right with AI, what's wrong with AI, a little more AI, then some more AI as well. And that's particularly because, AI is pretty much everywhere and every discussion in some way involves artificial intelligence. In fact, Leslie, since today morning, it's been about 5 hours since I started work. I've received about 30-ish media pitches for stories, of which I realized today and I counted today that each of those 30 pitches have a mention of AI, no matter what. There have been pitches from chatbot startups to companies doing IPOs, and everybody has a mention of AI. Do you sometimes feel that there's an overload of AI everywhere?
You know, it's not really a question of overload of AI. The problem is AI washing, because most of the time is, you know, using AI without even understanding what AI is. And that is what scares me more about those kind of pitches, because you really have to talk about what the company is doing, regardless of whether they are using AI, generative AI, IoT, cloud, edge, or what. These are enabling technologies. So the point is, what business problem are you solving? We have completely, I think, lost track of that all these technologies are a means to an end. They are not an end in themselves. Like today you're talking about AI, tomorrow you're talking about generative AI, tomorrow you will talk about AI plus quantum, tomorrow you will talk about AI plus synthetic biology plus quantum. These things are bound to happen. But each and every pitch when it comes to, it gets very irritating and it's extremely misleading and doesn't serve any purpose. So it is like you're commoditizing something that actually has so much value. So I think it ends up doing a disservice. Now, that's the way I look at it. I don't know. Maybe, Deepthi, how do you feel about it?
I don't know. I'm just enjoying the journey. So basically, before AI, the whole conversation was around other aspects of tech as well. And I'd really like to listen to those other aspects as well. But if AI is ruling the world at this point of time, I also don't want to miss out on that.
But By that logic, AI is everywhere. What are we talking? It's like electricity today. So now I have to tell everybody, you know, each and every time you're writing a page that, okay, you know, there's electricity also in this. I guess
that's
true.
Right. And, you know, on that note, this week, rather just this past weekend and starting of this week, we have the Mobile World Congress happening in Barcelona. Of course, this is one of the three big tech events which you're always told about once you start reporting on this industry. The first being CES in Las Vegas. MWC, of course, is interesting because it's actually an event where a lot of serious conversations around the future of business, the future of connectivity and telecom and all of this happens. But MWC is also a place where a lot of interesting consumer technology is shown and discussed. And I was actually quite happy and I was actually quite excited because after a long time, it felt like this Sunday was a very old school tech event kind of a Sunday where we had, you know, companies coming out and showing these fancy takes on conventional gadgets. You know, Lenovo, for instance, came up with a laptop which has a transparent, well, not transparent, but a translucent display. Motorola showed that smartphone which can bend and fit on your wrist and become a smartwatch. You know, things like this. Honor showed a smartphone. Honor is that company which branched off from Huawei after, you know, Huawei was sort of cut down by the US government. So Honor showed the smartphone which uses AI, but tracks your eyeball movement to see which app you're focusing on. And if you're focusing on a certain app at a certain point, it's going to open up this one particular app that you're looking at. I don't know if it works or not, but it sure sounds interesting. It sure sounds exciting, doesn't it?
I don't know. I think it sounds a little creepy. I mean, no. It's only going to help marketeers. It's only going to help companies sell their products more and better. But I, as an individual, wouldn't want my eyes or my actions to be monitored this closely. What do you say, Leslie?
I guess for some people, it's always unnerving. For some people, it's exciting. It's a matter of perspective. But I come back to, again, the fundamentals. What is the business problem? Is it it's solving? If it's solving any business problem, and if there's a customer need. Because at the end of the day, it's always about your customer, always about your client, about your business need. If you lose focus, then you'll end up doing, you know, kind of, you'll start making contraptions that serve really no purpose. So I'm sure, you know, but having said that, most of these companies that display these kind of products and technologies, whether regardless of whether they do it at CES, whether they do it at Mobile World Congress, or wherever they do it, they typically do a lot of market studies. So they do a lot of market research. They understand what are the customer needs. They take a lot of feedback. And today, all said and done, AI does help you, you know, do a lot of analytics with the kind of customer feedback you already get. So whenever you come out with a go-to-market strategy, you already know what you're doing. In most cases, at the end of the day, let's be realistic about it. Some technologies will take off, some technologies will fall by the wayside. Yeah. But then the same logic applies to any film. Like many of these films, like Bahubali and all, I mean, whether they expected to become blockbusters or not, I do not know. But the directors made them all the same. And at the same time, a film like Adipurush, which was, you know, all about Ram and Sita in a time when there's so much fervor around religion, flopped so badly. So whenever you're adding any...
But it was a bad film.
What I'm saying is, when you add a feature, when you make a film, when you introduce any new technology, you would have done enough market research and hopefully enough homework before launching it. After that, I mean, it all depends, you know, whether the customer picks it up or not. But all, but that, having said that, Barcelona is a beautiful place. I always loved my trip to the Mobile World Congress because of that. So it was always, beautiful cathedrals, lovely beaches, and it's simply amazing.
But sometimes I do feel that just because the technology is there, it is really being overused. Like there is, I'm not sure if there is any need. Like there's force feeding of that technology, you know, in our lives. We might not need it as much, or we can use it for something that we actually need it for. Climate change, for instance, is one of those things that, you know, I mean, recently there was a startup called Varaha that raised about $8.7 million in Series A round, right? And it basically, what it does is it helps companies offset carbon footprint by nature-based products. And they also use large language models. They also use technology to ensure that there is less carbon footprint. So I'd rather talk about AI in that from that perspective. What do you guys think?
Dipti, that's a matter of choice, isn't it? At the end of the day, what you like, what you prefer. Like there are many things that probably the gadgets that you use, including the rabbits that you talk about. Not everybody jumping, you know, to buy the next gadget.
True.
Talking about. So, yeah. I always feel it's a personal choice. Like, for instance, am I really fond of, you know, digital watch, which looks after every health aspect, which monitors my BP, which monitors my... I'm not too sure about, you know, whether this surfeit of gadgets. Yet at the same time, also it could be a factor which generation you belong to. Sometimes, typically, I'm saying there are always outliers in every generation. A digital native will, you know, who is born with all these gadgets, will not find these strange. Will find it so interesting, and that is what most of our listeners are. So I don't know.
Right.
Yet at the same time, you may want to still have a Rolex with you, because that gives you a very different kind of feel. So the best of Apple Watches that you may have, and I have other legs. I don't know which will, you know, catch more attention. Probably when there's everything else is commoditized, maybe my the Rolex may, you know, grab everybody's attention.
But you know, this is something that I've been sort of trying to say to so many people, that you know, you buy an Apple Watch for like 55,000-60,000 rupees.
And you get it for 60,000. I thought it was something like almost like 1 lakh with all the.
No, so there is, I think, the Watch Ultra which costs around 1 lakh, but the normal watch costs around 50,000-60,000. But that watch will last you for about 3 years, and after that it goes obsolete because it won't get your software updates and it won't support the latest features. And you know, Apple will come out with an advertisement which will show you very nicely in pristine 4K resolution as to what kind of features are you missing out in life. And once that happens, you would want to spend another 60,000 to buy another Apple Watch. Instead of that, if you spend 60,000 on a Tissot chronograph, it's going to last you for, I don't know, 5 generations.
Yeah, but it may not serve the purpose, you know. As I said, always aspirations and all, these are very subjective kind of
that's
thing.
True.
You, because otherwise, the whole economy will crumble. Like, why do you want to, you know, buy the latest gadget? Why are some people sort of satisfied with a 3,000 rupees digital watch? And why is it that some people need an Apple Watch or the Samsung Galaxy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it all depends. Even smartphones, for that matter of fact. Really, do you require, like say tomorrow they make a translucent smartphone, would you want it? Or the rollable and the bendable kind of smartphones that they're coming up with.
Right.
They say if I come up with a smartphone that can be rolled and put into your pocket, now then you roll it back and you do it. Okay. There'll always be probably one segment of that population that may want something and look, you know, looks at it like a novelty. But other than the subjectivity, the technologies that caught my attention were the... So I thought, so Mobile World Congress is more about two aspects. One is the consumer part of it, where the products are launched. And also you have underlying technologies, the serious kind of technologies, 5G, IoT, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In that context, you know, the ones which caught my attention, one was the Hyperloop TT capsule, which is this next generation high speed mobility experience. I think that Hyperloops run at about something like 700 miles per hour. 700 miles per hour would be 700 into 8 by 5. So you do the maths and then you can figure it out. Then, you know, the next hospital, which is showcasing advances in AI, IoT, frontier materials, medicine, etc. Those were very interesting.
Yeah.
Another technology was the Able Human Motion, which was actually an able exoskeleton for individuals with mobility impairments. Now, this exoskeletons are very, very familiar, very, very sort of common in countries like Japan. And because this is the old age.
Yeah.
The aging kind of population that you have in Japan, exoskeletons are there so that, you know, it gives them enough support, whether it's a back support, whether it's leg support. So I found those very, you know, Dipti was saying, what is the use of those kind of things? I find these technologies very useful.
Yes.
Then, you know, of course, things like an unmanned barista on demand vehicle transforming coffee consumption. Okay, fine.
So, you know, when you mention vehicles, in fact, I found Google's generative AI announcement to have made a lot of sense this time, where Google said that it's going to use generative AI in its Android Auto platform so that when your phone is connected to the car, it's going to use AI to read your messages and offer a quick summary of not just your messages.
BMW had already used a generative AI LLM, if not mistaken. They have done that earlier also. So
yes.
These things have been going on for the past 1 year. Gemini, I think with Google, I think first it needs to get its woke culture straightened out, because there are too many glitches in Gemini as of now. Those need to be ironed out first. Otherwise, you'll have the car spitting out sentences which probably don't make sense. And if my only fear is if the LLM starts hallucinating at that point in time.
Oh.
Yeah. Because AI hallucination in the middle of a drive is not something that anybody would want.
Yeah, your GPS does hallucinate. My GPS has taken me to a dead end and told me my destination has arrived. And when I got off the vehicle, luckily I had applied my handbrake, else my destination would have been a ravine. And there are many people who have ended up in the middle of some farmland or somebody else's property.
Yeah.
And says destination has arrived. So
absolutely.
I think those hallucinations will have to be a little careful. Or say, if you use LLM in an airplane, I would be scared. So I think
you probably don't want to use AI while landing an airplane.
No, AI. No. So AI.
Not while flying it.
No, it's already being used. So that for.
Yeah, but autopilot, of course, sir.
How else do autopilots work?
Yeah, correct.
An AI has already been used. So, no. I see, but there in that's why I'm saying when you already implement it in enterprises, there is tremendous amount of care and a lot of runs and reruns and test runs and a lot of pilots before getting that and getting a plane airborne kind of stuff. And remember, autopilots were there from 1812 1912, the first plane that flew on autopilot. So from then, and they also have backups. So there's a lot of redundancy
built in,
which is the case. But now I think the interesting part, talking about your electric vehicle, about the vehicle part of it and getting the LLM, is the entire marriage of cloud and edge. So there's that whole integration. Earlier, we used to say, now we are going to put things in the cloud, then now we are going to put things on the edge. For the benefit of our listeners, edge computing simply means running all these LLMs on edge devices, which at the end of the day means the device in your hand, whether it's your laptop, whether it is your smartphone, whether it is any kind of handheld device or your phone, or perhaps at some point in time when computing power increases, perhaps on your watch also. So a lot of stuff will be happening. I find it very, very interesting. And 5G, I think, is another technology that has sort of achieved a certain level of maturity as per the Mobile World Congress thing. And that, Shovik, you have been covering 5G for quite some time. The last count that I had on those numbers was something like 130 million 5G users in India,
right.
B30 and 1.67 billion global users.
Global users, yes.
5G users. Of course, I think the comparison with 4G is it's something like 25 times faster than 4G. My only point is I don't notice. It's not a very noticeable difference because...
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of, it's a fact of how many tower stations you have, how many base stations you have. So how many towers you have, how many base stations you have. So all these things count a lot. What's your experience, Shovik?
Right. So, yes, of course, 5G, of course, is a subset of technology that has played a key role at MWC, and Qualcomm's announced new infrastructure to upgrade. And of course, 5G fixed wireless access points are supposed to increase, 5G adoption. And that's something that we've seen at MWC this year. But interestingly, of course, in the networking space, we've seen people already speak about and already prepared for 6G and the future generations of connectivity. And not just 6G, in fact, Wi-Fi 7 has been playing a pretty big conversation in terms of the overall narrative, in terms of when Wi-Fi 7 might come and how it can help in the entire spectrum allocation issue.
Shovik, one thing I think we should be clear about it, that talking about 6G probably at this point in time is a little too ahead of its time, for the simple reason that, from a marketing perspective and from a technology preparedness perspective, it's important to talk about these technologies. But at the same time, with every 5G, like 4G to 5G, 5G to 6G, or 3G to 4G, or 2G to 3G, there's always been that gap of a decade. That's typically what telecom companies have shown us. So now 6G, I don't see the rollouts happening before 2030, and even after after my talks with Qualcomm and Ericsson and all these other companies, and I'm sure that has been your experience. What I would be interested in knowing, how many 5G smartphones do we have actually?
I think the entire smartphone, 5G smartphone base is somewhere around 150 million in India. But Leslie, what's interesting to note is that in the past few quarters, the number of 5G smartphones that are being sold is considerably outselling the number of 4G smartphones, which is showing a clear proliferation in terms of the overall availability of 5G smartphones from, say, until a certain point, it was 20,000 and above. And now it's coming to those 15,000 rupees and 10,000 rupees price points, which is going to further take that 150 million number of 5G smartphones to sort of an exponential increase. And I think that is what is going to expand the entire 5G user base, and slowly that is when the entire 4G user count is going to go down, which, as you rightfully said, is going to happen probably in the space of nearly a decade.
Yeah, I think it's logical for 4G to be phased out at some point in time, because 5G also lends itself more to the Internet of Things. So the connectedness of devices, etc. So 5G actually is also lends itself to the industrial space. So it's actually important from that point of view to think about 5G from those points of view. That makes a lot
right.
of
sense. Right, absolutely. But I also want to ask you guys, when it comes to 5G, and I think Leslie touched upon this also, that there's not a big apparent difference between 4G and 5G when it comes to you using it on your phone. Deepthi, do you use 5G, and do you really find a difference between back when you used to be on 4G networks and now that you're on 5G?
So the thing is that I haven't switched to 5G yet. There is some problem with my device or something or the other, and I just don't get the time to, get it fixed. But I honestly have not had any issues. I speak to you guys, I speak to different other people. And I mean, there isn't a lot of difference between the time spent searching, researching something. If you have to look up, the internet for something. In my experience, at least.
The quality might tell, Deepthi, when you're using hardcore, when you're using Netflix, OTT platforms, or you're using video streaming.
Correct.
In mobile gaming, for instance.
Correct. So for me, films has also not been. That is one of the things that I would have just, I would have gone ahead and I would have gotten, the latest tech, 5G installed. I would have gotten that change from 4G to 5G. If films were an issue, if OTT platforms were an issue, but they're not an issue for me. Really. I don't know what's the fuss about, to be honest. In my experience, it has not been an issue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, because I think with 4G hotspots, you can...
My point was slightly different out here. I'm going to play contra over here. I'm saying that because you're not a mobile gamer, because you don't use hard COVID. So if you think that, you would have definitely felt it. See, making a call, making a thing, that's not going to help. But if you're running an LLM on a phone, okay, if you're doing those kind of things, then you have to graduate. So that is where all these, whether it is going to be an LLM-based smartphones, GenAI, enabled smartphone, which will require a 5G connection. Those things are bound to happen as you start upgrading the services and start adding more and, increasing your features. So, and also, currently, the noticeable difference is not that, which was Shovik, my point was limited to that I don't think it's not a question of the noticeable difference between 4G and 5G is definitely there. It's, 5G by any standards is much, much faster. I have tried both 5G and 4G, so I know how it works. But I think what happens is most of the time there are dark spots. And, not enough towers and not enough base stations, which causes the problem. I don't know if you all have any other experience.
I think Deepthi has something to say.
I agree because my brother, he's a gamer, and he uses, whenever he uses my phone, he has the same, he complains that the phone is slow, right? So to your point, Leslie, you're right. But at the same time, there aren't enough towers out there to support it. And also, then there are the health hassles that come along with putting towers up. So people, there is a certain resistance even in communities.
That's a very interesting point. Mm-hmm. Shovik, health hazards, why exactly? This I would love to hear. Because now I am curious. What exactly health hazard?
Even I want to know what health hazards are we...
So, I don't know. But I'm just going to give you a small example of how things function in my community where I live, right? So, for the longest time, they didn't want towers installed because apparently the waves or something, there is some sort of a risk to health. I'm also not quite sure because the deeper I go into it, the more confusing it gets.
For the benefit of our listeners, let me clarify one thing.
Please do.
I am least interested in defending any telecom, any telco for that matter of fact. I really don't care how many towers they have and how many towers they don't. But when we talk about health hazards, there are some things that we have to really take. One is most of what the fear that we have had over a period of time has been anecdotal, not backed by data. Okay, so that's one thing very, very clear. That there's never been some evidence at this point in time. There's no evidence. So you can look at any of the, whether it's the ITU, the International Telecom Agency, that the ITU world, body that is there. Or you look at data from any credible source for that matter of fact. Now, you can always have this argument that the data is skewed, the data is not adequate, the data is skewed more towards benefiting the telecoms. Regardless of that, there's one scientific part of it which I tend to explain to people who talk about health hazards. How health hazards, basically the fear it will cause cancer. Am I right? That radiation will cause cancer? Okay. Now let's...
Yes, you're right.
Let me address it very simple from a science point of view. You can keep on arguing till the cows come home, but from a science point of view, what the radiation that comes from towers is known as non-ionizing radiation. Non-ionizing radiation means it does not destroy your cancer cells, it does not split it, which is what causes cancer, basically. Am I clear about this part of it? So from a scientific basis, this is not ionizing radiations. So it is like for X-rays, if you go through an X-ray machine, if you go to a nuclear plant or you go to something, that is what, that kind of radiation causes cancer because it destroys your certain cells that are there and it splits the cells. Now, in this particular case, this particular radiation is known as non-ionizing, which is why it is not as harmful as any other radiation. Now, one could at the same time have this argument that too many towers together, you know, if they are, you know, in a particular place, you have too many towers built together. See, first of all, no telecom company will want to build so many towers just next to each other. It doesn't make sense. They'll have more base stations. Why would they have, you know, 50 towers? Shobhik, you may want to pitch in here on that, how the towers, at what distance they are. But, you know, the point is you could always have base stations. So they don't have too many towers. If you see, the towers are spread over certain distances. And as I said, all societies should be clear about this. I know some celebrities also have taken up the cause. I won't take any names out here. And, you know, sort of misled people into thinking that this causes cancer. But there's no evidence for that. And as I just said, even celebrities need to understand the difference between ionizing radiation and non-ionizing radiation. A simple Google search will tell you what it is. So I think...
Yes, absolutely.
Some background of science, some effort to, you know, understand the scientific explanation is also equally important. It's in...
When it comes to different communities, societies, right? Even though there are people out there who will, you know, do their research and everything, it's very difficult to get through the politics of it all.
I remember when COVID started, there was this entire phase where, and that was the same time when 5G towers were being set up. It was in process. And I remember there was this entire time that around the world, there were multiple of these protesters and conspiracy theorists who started spreading this news or an apparent news that setting up a 5G cell towers carries the COVID-19 virus with the radiation from the towers. And this became a thing where in the United Kingdom, there were a large number of 5G towers were burnt down and vandalized.
Even in the US.
Am I hearing this right?
even in the US.
Yes, this was a thing. This was a big thing, and it became a rage. And even in India, I remember I was in Mumbai when the first lockdown happened and this conversation started happening. So I was with the publication I was with at that time. They asked me to do an explainer on the truth behind these theories. And I remember after we published that explainer, there was a person who reached out to me on Twitter saying that I should be ashamed of spreading fake news because 5G cell towers were confirmed to be the reason for which the COVID-19 virus spread from China to India and the rest of the world. And it was absolutely mind-blowing to know that, you know, when people are determined to blame technology for something, they are really, really determined.
No, it's always the case, you know, because Dipti, this is the way I see it. Like when we did not understand how clouds worked, or, you know, how thunder and lightning works, then we created the thunder god, we created a god of light, we created a god of rain. It's bound to, so we tend to deify things, and we tend to, you know, sort of, we need to demystify and explain all these things. But as of now, I would just humbly suggest to our listeners that please read up about non-ionizing radiation, because the energy is not sufficient to, you know, cause cancer or any other such disease. There is no evidence, whether you go to the World Health Organization, you go to ITU. You can, of course, always argue and say that, you know, these institutions are supporting the telecom companies and we don't have to believe them. Well, that's a stand that... you know, there's no argument against, so I rest my case out here.
For now, we are going to sign off on that note. If you are joining us at the very end of the podcast, today we discussed about the fancy gadgets that were unveiled at Mobile World Congress. We learned that we don't really think that a transparent laptop display is very useful, which is very true. It doesn't seem to be very useful. We also learned that the world is getting more serious about 5G. We also learned that Deepti thinks that funding sustainable startups is very important. And of course, what we've known about her for the past 8 weeks, that she will buy the rabbit assistant someday. And on that note, Leslie, Deepti, if you guys would have anything else to add.
No, and that Deepti is also afraid of radiation from the towers.
It's not me,
yes. Now we also know that she's afraid of radiation.
Okay, so...
Now we know that she's also afraid of radiation from the towers. Deepti, just for your information, the office building that you are on has towers. And you've been sitting on it for 5 years or something.
I know, I'm not afraid of radiation from towers.
Also for your information, the bricks in your house emit radiation. If you go in an effluent, it emits radiation. Everything emits radiation. But most of it is luckily non-ionizing radiation. But
yes, and on that bombshell, it's time to end. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you like what you heard, or if you didn't like what you heard, do reach out to us on email or on our social platforms, which will be there in the description of this podcast. And that's it for this week. See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Cetera. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepti Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.